Today on the Cooligans, we are talking about the new Premier League champions. We both have reasons to be
happy. We're not having a good time.
We're not having a good time about it. But Liverpool do win the Premier League. And we also talk Copa del Rey, one of the wildest, one of the craziest games. And also, we try to figure out, what is Real Madrid done? They are crashing out harder than anyone ever expected.
You know who's not done? Lisa Carly, because she's on the show, folks. Attacking Third, the star of Attacking Third. Everyone's going to be upset I said that. Obviously, I know, I work with her at CBS. She's the best. And that doesn't end there, because in the third segment, we go ahead and wreck something. Because we're talking about Wrexham getting promoted 3 times in a row. And can they keep it going? That and more today on the Cooligans.
Alexis, did you hear about the USC versus UCLA first ever sperm race? Have you heard about this?
Okay, so I saw it in my socials and I did not want to click on it. But there was people looking in
microscopes.
Microscopes. So I guess they were racing their sperm.
They were racing their sperm. Mm. This is, I try to pride myself on being as open-minded.
The fastest sperm.
This is why I'm an athlete.
You know who won? Mateo, bro. Round of applause for Mateo. Mateo beat billions.
My son is evidence.
Yo, son.
No, but I try to pride myself on being as open-minded, progressive, forward-thinking, you know?
All sports deserve a chance.
Exactly. We're all athletes in our own way. Right. Some people think curling is not a sport, but I tell those people, no, man, it's, you know, this, whatever.
You got to sweep the ice.
You got to sweep the ice.
I don't know what they're doing.
All I'm saying, the sperm race and the curlers do the same exercises.
It's the same muscles.
It's the same training. But the fact that this...
Can't do it on the cold, though.
The fact that...
Tough.
The fact that this exists and it's a real thing that the production value was remarkable. Yeah. It was entertaining. It was lights. There was the audience. They had influencers there being like, all right, let me go check this out. Let me see what this is about.
I need to see sperm racing betting.
That is already there.
Already exists?
The people, they're making money off of every aspect of this sport.
Do we get to see the person who produced the winner?
Yes. Oh, wait. Yeah. Who produced the... Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the person who produced the person who is the winner. No, like their parents.
Do we get to see the human...
Yes.
That supplied the winner.
And then they also did pre-game and post-game... analysis and reaction. They treat it like a regular, sports center.
I'm going to say this now, man. I feel like 10 years ago when you and I decided to do this, we didn't have the vision.
We did not. No, it's a missed opportunity.
To attach ourselves to.
Missed opportunity.
It feels kind of a sticky sport, too. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, there's part of it is like...
What are they racing to?
The finish line. Wait, so they...
I swear there's a carbon dioxide leak in this studio today.
There is basically it's a tunnel that mimics the
fallopian
tubes and to get to the egg. So
it's like F1. Yo, you guys been to fallopian?
Well, the participants wear racing suits.
Sure.
it's every aspect of it is like so gross, but then also like, you're making it look good.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so that's where I'm at. I'm like, I don't know what this means for humanity, for society, that this is where we're at. We have bigger problems, but this is apparently a big focus. And
I just thought of a really rude joke, but I'm going to say it anyway, because this is only for the pod. This never makes the air on the podcast. Is that I heard that my ex showed up and swallowed all the losers.
Well, I don't even know what that. Why are we attacking her? What did she do? Did nothing to nobody. On top of that, I'll tell you what the loser does get. The loser gets
a nap.
No,
it's exhausting.
Has to go into basically a box or a tube of some kind and gets a shower that looks like what was racing.
Word? I didn't know which button to hit for that.
It's every aspect of this is like insane, but entertaining enough to not shut it off. That's what I'm saying. So was a crazy weekend, to say the least.
Let me tell you something. Sperm racing. Who knew? Who knew? If you were the one who suggested it in the conference room, you would have been kicked out of that company.
But maybe this is the defining moment where we're like, hey, I think we're too old for this. We're too old for new media.
Nah, dude. I think we're coming right at the right time.
Okay.
Just takes a little longer to produce the racers. That's all.
All right. Maybe the Cooligan sperm race is coming up next.
I know I'd win that.
I don't know.
You look through at me like, where did one of them get a couch?
That's my boy. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, my name is Alex Guerreros. Quick note, if you don't listen to the audio, you should.
You should.
You're missing out.
The incredible show today. Not only did we have a lot of soccer to cover, a lot of stuff going on in Europe, we're also going to be joined a little bit later by our dear friend, and definitely your co-worker, Lisa
the
Carlin.
Homie.
Lisa Carlin of Attacking Third and CBS Sports Golazo. She's on all the shows. She does it all. So we're going to have a lot of, a big Woso conversation with her. Mm-hmm. And then also talk about everything. Get to know Lisa a little
bit. We'll talk Woso. We'll talk Masso.
We'll talk Moso. Liverpool clinched their 20th league title, their second Premier League title, tying Manchester United. And that is why they are today's top topic. Is it a sad moment for the second place Arsenal fans, or are you glad it's over? But Liverpool Football Club win the league against Tottenham at Anfield. Producer Carter is you can't rely on him or Tottenham for anything, right, Carter? So
happiest loss of my lifetime.
Yeah,
love it. I love it. Give him the league, baby. Let's go.
Can I tell you why I'm happy about that as well? First of all, you asked, am I happy it's over? I'm relieved more than happy.
Sure.
Why I am happy that Tottenham lost is because then the guard of honor happens at Chelsea and not at Arsenal. Because their next two matches were Chelsea, Arsenal. So if Tottenham somehow found a way to win, it would have delayed it by a week.
Right.
So it was possible that they would have won the league at Chelsea and then we would have had to do the guard of honor. Nah.
Okay.
Nah. Can't do that.
All right, you take any win where you can find it. Right?
So at least there's some positive there. It's frustrating. It feels unfortunate. But at the end of the day, I feel like this is kind of, we've seen this happening all season, so it's not that big of a surprise.
Yeah,
for an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, this does feel, I think with the combination of the three teams already relegated and Liverpool,
the league won already.
It's been there weren't enough surprises.
This is why they need playoffs.
I mean, look, that's a whole other thing.
We'd still be talking about it.
We don't have to get into it.
It's not even May and the league's over.
Everybody in England, just shut off the show. Done with these idiots.
Yeah, damn, again? I gave them a chance.
No, man. So, every year can't be super exciting with a very close title race. And you're going to have, some of these incredible point gaps where it just, honestly, with the Premier League, I'm disappointed that the teams relegated were the exact same three teams that came up and relegated so quickly in the season. And we have the Champions League places that were kind of, and now there's five. So we're a little bit excited about it. But then it's just,
Nottingham Forest, they've been there for so long that it's not that exciting of a story. Until it becomes official that they're in the Champions League.
Yeah.
It's really not that exciting of a story just yet.
Sure.
It kind of feels like we're all just kind of just waiting around to see what happens by the end of the season. Who does get into Champions League? Who gets into Europa? Who's going to conference? There's really not that much exciting. As an Arsenal fan, it's frustrating to finish the league three times in a row in second place.
What else?
It's really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, and we can start to parse like kind of why did Liverpool win and why was it so easy? So like, and we can talk about where
on the slot. I mean, what a legendary first season.
Yeah, he is one of, I think, five or six managers to win the Premier League in their first season. I had seen a list. I know it was Mourinho and Ancelotti.
He's the fifth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I forgot the other two. But
Pellegrini and Antonio Conte.
Love it. So shout out to Producer Guard.
Three Italians?
Ancelotti, Pellegrini, and Conte. Yep.
Wow. So This is look, and he was fairly modest.
We need to sack our touch and get an Italian manager. Guaranteed to win you the league in the first season.
He was pretty modest after the game and after, you know, celebrating the win. It was just like about what needed to change after Jurgen Klopp. He didn't say that there was much.
He's played it very smart the whole way. He never raised the expectations or gave himself too high of a bar to try to cross. He was very calm, very sort of placid throughout the season in his reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly wins. It was not really the only real thing was the Mohamed Salah drama that was happening.
That just sounds great. Mohamed Salah drama. I love saying those three words together.
The Salah drama was really the only issue.
Had nothing to do with him.
And maybe some of the Trent stuff that kind of snuck up. But yeah, there was all, he handled it pretty well. And, you know, Susanna Collins, formerly of Susanna Collins, Susanna Fuller, on Morning Footage, she would always be like, I don't know. And I said, I think he's going to be able to advance the tactics of what Jurgen Klopp did. Because I think, and you're sort of seeing in the Premier League now, it feels like the tides are changing from the Premier League that sort of first popped up on American television, right? That was, everyone was trying to be more like the Tiki Talk. Everyone's trying to be a little bit more, you know, Pep Guardiola. It feels like the tides are changing. It feels like it's becoming a bit more direct. And I think you saw that gegenpressing, people had kind of figured it out and players are kind of get exhausted from it. There's only so many seasons you can play that sort of heavy metal football and, you know, stay at your peak physically. And you saw the tides are changing. I thought Arne Slot was going to be able to advance that. And I think that's exactly what he did. Did I think he would come in and absolutely boss a league in the first season? Absolutely not.
Yeah. And my thoughts as to why that happened and why it seemed almost easy is the combination. I think what Arne Slot did well was the rotation was fantastic. Mm-hmm. A lot of young players got minutes, got opportunities.
Started under Jurgen Klopp because of all the injuries last season, but he advanced on that.
Sure. Yeah. But even just, again, you got to give credit to the manager for making those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Creating trust, creating an environment where younger players got opportunities. Mm-hmm. And then those younger players stepping up. Like Curtis Jones is an example of like,
yeah,
just like, even if it's 3-4 games where he is the person that makes the difference. That is the difference.
Yeah.
That could be the difference.
Had they lost those 3-4 games, we'd be having a different conversation about the league right now.
Gravenberch.
To me, Gravenberch was a revelation.
Sure.
A player who couldn't get minutes under Klopp. Different style. Asking him to sit in front of that back line and play that position. He did it masterfully.
Yeah. And again, another player that gets a lot of flack, but Darwin Nunez. Again, yes, he had a couple great opportunities missed this season.
Tons.
But he was influential in either creating space for chances, scoring a few goals.
He didn't play a lot in the beginning.
Like,
he got into, he was able to sort of mold him into a player he needed him to be.
Exactly. And for a player that they spent, whatever, 90 or 100 million on and who was on the bench most of the season, mm-hmm, and still steps in and can change games and makes different. You got to give credit of just like you said, outside of the Mohamed Salah drama, there could have been other issues and they really were not. So, it was just, it's kind of masterful. And,
he deserves all the plaudits that he gets.
Sure. There were a couple moments of, with obviously Liverpool is blue and red.
This was to me, I don't even know what button to hit. I'll go here. To me, this was huge. You're watching the celebrations, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, there's nothing for me here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an Arsenal fan. And then all of a sudden, you see blue flares.
Yeah, so this
was... And I said to myself, wait a minute.
So this was a funny thing. This popped up... I saw this maybe like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. This popped up on my Everton group chat of all the folks in there. Everybody's in Liverpool. I'm the only American one in there.
This also gives you a good idea of what being an Everton fan is like. It's like small wins, man.
Get
a win where you can.
What I love about this, obviously, a fan did, they bought a bunch of flares, a bunch of red flares. And
10,000.
10,000 and changed the labels.
Over 4 weeks. If the tweet is to be believed, over 4 weeks changed all the labels from blue to red.
Mm-hmm.
So that when somebody, and then sold them outside the stadium.
Yeah.
So that when fans bought them, I don't even know if he got his, I hope he made his money back.
It doesn't matter. It's worth it.
I know,
bro.
The vibes are great. But when the fans, obviously thinking this is a red flare, I'm going to hold it up. Some in the stadium, some outside the stadium, they start spraying blue. And there's video of a fan in the stadium going like, ah, pops it. Yeah. And it's boom, he drops it. He's like, I don't know what that is. That's not me, bro. I didn't do that. And this is to me like the, you know, we talk about sometimes how some of the fandom in the sport across the world can be a little toxic sometimes.
Sure.
But these are those little, the banter associated with it.
This is a cute one.
This is a cute one.
This is the cutie patootie one.
Yeah, and I'm sure this involved a lot of anger and a lot of frustration. But for years, Everton fans will be able to say, oh, yeah, they won the league that year. But did you see?
Yeah.
Did you see them popping blue flares?
So what I love about this is that even Liverpool fans are like, hey, you know, I'm a diehard Liverpool supporter, but this is actually pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah, you got us.
You got
us. Yeah, you got us.
So you got to like, you know, just like you got to find, you know, wherever the wins are. This feels like a, just say, hey, yeah, we know you won. Yeah. But like, you know, we're getting a new stadium. We're trying to be competitive in this city for attention and stuff like that. But hey, like I think it speaks very well to what Everton fans and how their sense of humor, even when we were in Liverpool. This is a very Evertonian way of handling this. Right. So
so my question is, how does Liverpool get them back? Stadium opens, they burst a couple red flares, maybe.
Okay, that'd be funny. Hey,
let's see. Did you see there was a guy who wrote Arsenal tears on a cup of water and then was like, oh, and then drank it and then celebrated, and no one celebrated with him? This guy, it was super cringy.
I mean, there isn't that much of a, there's not a huge rivalry between Arsenal and Liverpool.
I mean, there is. I mean, it's not there as much is a rivalry, but it's not like them and Manchester United or anything. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. The other, another match in Europe that we have to discuss is the Copa del Rey, the final.
What an absolute incredible game. I just want to say, for the most part of the season, Real Madrid versus Barcelona was a one-sided affair.
Sure.
This game had it all.
Yeah.
This game had it all.
And you even as the whistle blows, you still feel the other matches from this season, the Super Clásico, the Super Copa, I mean.
Yeah.
And then in La Liga. And this felt like one where, look, yeah, maybe, you know, Barcelona are still in Champions League, Real Madrid or not. They lost in embarrassing fashion to Arsenal.
I think Real Madrid had given up something like 12 goals to Barcelona this season.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
So you would think, not that Real Madrid were going to like beat the brakes off of them and win, but with the injury to Robert Lewandowski, yep, the injury to Alejandro Balde.
Yep.
So I'm like, okay, this is at least an opportunity for Real Madrid to...
This could be a chance for Real Madrid to squeak one out. Not necessarily figure them out, but squeak one out. Get one.
And I think, you know, I'm watching the game, watching the post-game celebration, all the interviews, and there's something about Barcelona right now that are just like... I had seen this quote, and I don't know who said it, and it said that every team in Europe is afraid of Real Madrid, and Real Madrid is afraid of Barcelona.
That's a great way to put it.
And that's where I think just this year, and it's impressive because we know all the financial issues that Barcelona is having.
This is what I wanted to bring up.
The confidence.
How did you get yourself back?
How do you still believe in yourself?
It's like watching your boy who owes you money pull up in a new car with a grill and a new chain. You're like, where'd you get it? How'd you do it?
You
owe so many people so much money. How did you get yourself back?
100%. Yeah, it's so, it's like comic.
And the vibes are good.
The vibes are fantastic.
Your mom pulls up with the
your credit card bill is through the roof.
Crazy. Yo, you should be stressed out, Max.
And you out here dancing.
Your phone buzzing with creditors right now. And you at the club popping bottles. I don't know where this came from, but the vibes are so fun.
Yeah, man.
Around this team.
And it has to start with a couple players, right? Lamine Yamal.
Lamine Yamal starting ends. It starts and ends with him. He is one of the most sensational players.
It's something where, like, again, the
and his dad feels like he would hang out with us. You know what I mean?
Got his dad on
his
the
dad
show.
Is mad chill, got a good fade, dresses like me, listens to OGZ. I can't believe this is happening.
And Lamine Yamal, for some reason, he's raising a Dominican son.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
His JBL speaker guy got like an alpha blasting.
I
from
love
him.
It, bro. So Lamine Yamal, you know, the comparisons to Lionel Messi are always there. I mean,
it's going to stay there.
Because obviously he's so young and he's playing so well. But he doesn't play like Messi does. He's not exactly as technical. But there,
the comparison should be more to Neymar. Because there's a flair he plays with.
Yeah, I can see
that. There's a sensationalism he plays with.
But what my favorite part about him is the... And we saw it on the first assist to Pedri. And Pedri, who I'll talk to about in a sec.
There was seven defenders on him?
But nobody wanted to...
Nobody stepped up.
Why are they scared of this child?
They're all saying, hold me back. And they're like, yo, none of y'all holding each other back. But what's funny is he kind of knows it. He plays where, oh... If y'all didn't step, y'all not gonna. He just slowly rolls the ball to the other foot, looks up, and just sees the pass. And now everyone has to lunge themselves at.
They're so terrified of his left foot. And you see the every body feint where he looks like he's gonna shoot. Everybody's putting their arms behind and they're trying to get in block the
everybody
ball.
Look like they're river dancing.
And so that it's something where it's impressive if any player can make other defenders feel that way. For a 17-year-old to do that is. It says so much about...
It's hard for me to understand because, I've played soccer, I've played basketball, I've played baseball. Baseball, you don't ever go 1v1.
Yeah.
But in basketball and soccer, you do. And I still remember players just making eye contact with me when I have the ball and running towards me. I'm like, what? I don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
I could feel that. He has never felt that. He's 17 and look what he's doing. He's like, they're afraid of me. He's like Walter White. I'm the danger. You know what I mean?
This is a stat. Hansi Flick has won each of his first three games against Real Madrid as Barcelona coach, including all competitions, make him only the second Barcelona coach in history to win his first three such games after Pep Guardiola, who did it.
Who's won five.
It's something, again, credit to Hansi Flick. And there's a balance of, a style, tactics and
but also switching away from the total football, the Johan Cruyff, Pep Guardiola, La Masia style, and saying like, look at the wingers we have. If we have space, put the ball in the space and let him cook.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what they did, man.
Yeah, so there's a couple things in this game. First, credit to Mbappe.
I was waiting for you. He did it.
His first free kick, first direct free kick in his
career.
It was a great goal. I thought it was a little bit of a poor wall.
He's had poor walls before.
This
one he scored.
But they count off the post. Nonetheless, Mbappe came into this game in the second half.
That's all it took is he had to get benched. Can't start a game and score a free kick.
That's it. Don't let him start ever again.
Yeah.
Real Madrid, I mentioned this before. I think in the first leg of the Champions League, Luka Modric is the one who basically gave the ball away. And some people would blame Brahim Diaz for not checking to the ball and getting it.
Of course, he waited for it. Jules Koundé got the ball passed to him. Yeah.
Modric making that pass, it was a soft pass. You see Brahim Diaz point where he wants the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And Modric just delivers a fairly soft pass.
Maybe this is my bias because I think Luka Modric is one of the most incredible midfielders I've ever seen play. It still feels like it's Brahim Diaz's fault. You know what I mean? Like it does. If Luka Modric passes you the ball to a spot, that's probably the spot you should have been in.
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. He should have. In extra time, tiredness, emotions,
mm-hmm.
whatever. So it was a poor mistake on both players. It's like a matter. I would probably.
It's nobody's fault, but for me, it's 50.1% Brahim Diaz, not Luka Modric.
Sure. But it leads to Jules Koundé's goal that. Again, to have a he plays right back.
For him to score in that moment,
yeah,
this is what I'm talking about. Vibes. He to me is one of the most. He's like the new Memphis Depay. You know what I mean? Everything he does feels like, oh, this is going to end up in a beautiful edit.
Sure.
He's like the new Karim Benzema, as far as social media.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, this is the guy I wanted to score.
Yeah.
And his goal seller, his trophy flex.
Yes. Which was lovely.
So hard. It's
a great photo.
He needs to learn to rap because this should be the cover of an album.
The Copa del Rey trophy is also kind of fire.
So was the logo, by the way. I was looking at the logo every time they went to commercial. I'm like, this is my joint right here.
This is a big ass trophy. It's like a very traditional looking trophy, but it's big as hell.
Yeah, but it also doesn't have the accoutrement of old classical trophies.
I love
Did you know? You didn't know I knew the word accoutrement.
I mean,
did I pronounce it correctly? Jules, let me know.
It reminds me of that joke of the people like, did you know that there's no French word for rendezvous?
So, wow. Little, do we have a tire screeching?
fun little joke.
Yeah.
But no, the Real Madrid, really, at the end, Real Madrid and their collapse. You know, there was also a lot of drama even before the game because did you hear about the referee? That Real Madrid TV was mocking the referee that got assigned to the Copa del Rey final, and then the referee in the press conference referenced it because his son at school, the kids were bullying him, saying that your dad is a thief and he's gonna rob Real Madrid, and he's crying because his son is dealing with all the bullying at school, and then. Real Madrid and like Florentino Perez say that they should switch the ref. This is a few days before.
Damn.
And so it's like, what? They're crying before the actual game happens, and then the ref arguably favored.
Real Madrid. Pro Real Madrid.
Oh, not even pro, but
not pro.
The calls
in favor of yes.
Yeah, there was two non penalty calls that probably could have been called on Real Madrid, and. And then Rudiger ends up throwing.
I was gonna say something. If anybody's kid should be bullied, it's Rudiger.
I mean, this guy. We don't condone it at all.
Obviously, I'm kidding. And also, if you're that kid, chin up, my guy. Jesus Christ! What do their parents do? You're nothing. Has Real Madrid TV ever mentioned any of y'all dusty ass parents? The answer is no.
This is Alexis as a dad. Yeah, if you don't know.
For real. Your dad not even getting named on any of the professional soccer team TV.
It is a little bit like that. Why are you bringing this up? Now the entire world knows. First, it was just my classroom.
But yo, he got to be a little, the kid got to be a little bit stronger, bro. Yo, your dad's a ref, bro. You get to meet these people.
Okay.
You wish you was like me. That's what I would have said if you're trying to roast me.
All right. Well, look at that. All right.
I mean, well, let me pull up boring accountant TV. See if they bring up your parents.
Good point.
Let me bring up bum ass office manager TV. See if they talk about your dad. And I'd be like, yo, Steve, you ain't even got a dad. That's what it'd been me.
Yeah, okay.
I would have been Steve in this scenario.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, and then that kid could be grow up to become a comedian.
Yeah, this kid's got no swag, bro. You need me. You need me.
I did not think this is where we would go.
Really? No. You've been doing this show for a decade.
Literally no sympathy for the child at all.
No, not at all.
Anyway, but that moment at the end where, you know.
Yeah, Rudiger even took the ice pack he had on his knees, and he removed it and ripped a hole in it to get more ice to throw at the refs. As a coach, or I believe it's one of the assistant coaches holding him, like, stop this.
I didn't even know what he threw. Was it a water bottle?
I don't know what he threw at first, but he was trying to get more things to throw, and he had a pack of ice strapped to each of his knees.
Yeah,
he removed one of them in an effort to find more. So there's just ice all over this guy.
I mean, it is embarrassing, and you know, whatever, you can get mad at refs, but this is, I mean, we all know the line, and you know, it should never get to this point. I mean, the end of the game, obviously Rudiger gets a red card.
Which, who cares?
Lucas Vazquez gets a red card. Bellingham gets a red card. It was just a comic. And then
that's what you do, right? You gotta, if you're embarrassed, you create chaos.
Okay.
I know it's gonna get one on me. You know what I mean?
All right. Trump administration.
I'm not saying that's what I would do, but that's clearly
it's a tactic.
Clearly what's happening.
And then leaving the tunnel, Jude Bellingham is screaming like towards the cameras, and he says, every 50-50 went their way. Every 50-50 went their way. And it's like, bro, they had plenty of opportunities or even penalties that were not called.
Bro, I'm not even a Barcelona fan, but get your goals up, Bellingham.
Dude.
Then you don't have this conversation.
Be more like Bellingham. That's what they're saying, dog.
Score, papa.
Yeah, it's just getting to a point. This season, compared to last season, it's getting to a point where the drama, the controversy is overshadowing the quality of these players. And now with Ancelotti announcing that he's probably leaving, going to Brazil and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, we're back at square one where it's just like they win Champions League and they have such a great year. Last year, they bring Mbappe and they're like, that's it. We're going to basically take over Europe, and we're back to the drama of the Galacticos and Beckham being there and paparazzi and blah blah blah, and it just doesn't go away, and it's difficult to sort of tame that and keep it down and have consistency throughout the years. But this is where we're sort of at now, where the vibes are with Barcelona and Real Madrid have they back to the drawing board, and they have a lot to figure out, and we'll see how La Liga ends up, because they still have an opportunity to win that. But bro, not in a good place right now.
Jurgen Klopp to Real Madrid?
Sure, why not? I mean, it's Xabi Alonso's job. But,
let's create a little chaos.
Pep
Guardiola to Real Madrid. Would that ever happen?
Has a German manager ever managed Real Madrid? I don't think so,
That's
right?
a great question.
It's usually Spanish managers. Who else have they had? Italian.
Barcelona had Sir Bobby Robson. So an English guy.
All right. Well,
that's probably the furthest in Europe they've
maybe
gone.
Maybe Carter will ask ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Maybe Lisa Carlin knows.
Why? She's one of our guests.
She's one of our guests. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be joined by Lisa Carlin of Attacking Third and CBS Sports Colosso right after this.
I mean, Christian, we talk about revolving door.
Yes.
Superstars that are willing to walk into the studio. And every time I'm like, how did we get you to walk into the studio?
Yeah, it is always a question. It's always like, hey, should we ask this person? And they're like, there's no way they would.
No, not at all. I feel like anytime someone comes in, they're like, I need a shower when I get out of here. this person, no different. I had the joy of working with her for many, many months. Love watching her on Morning Footy, Attacking Third, all the other stuff. Host, analyst. Other stuff.
wow.
The one, the only.
Reading the
Lisa
resume.
Lisa Carlin, everybody.
Guys, thanks. This is fun. Thanks for having me. I feel like I also really pushed to be here. Every time I saw Alexis, I was like, so?
Yeah. Well, I said once.
Can I get the invite?
Yeah.
I said once to you, I was like, yo, I'd love to have you on Cooligans. And she was like.
I was like, send the carrier pigeon.
I will not stop until you invite me on the show.
There was a little bit of, even I was a part of the situation of when I witnessed that. And I'm like, the guilt was there. Like the little strong arming. Little bit like, hey, you know, it would be the right thing to do would be to invite me on.
Exactly. He tried to pull the, I don't know if I have your number, what's your email. I was like, Alexis.
I'm texting other people named Lisa. They're coming on the show.
Why are you texting Lisa?
Is that a freestyle singer?
That is a freestyle singer.
Right now there's a 65-year-old Puerto Rican going, what?
I did not think Lisa.
How did Alexis get her number?
Lisa Carlin, what is up? Thank you so much for joining. I'm glad this finally happened. Yes, we've been, I've been watching you, especially on Attacking Third and on NWSL broadcast for years. And it's something where, us working in this space, there are few people. Even let's say like, sometimes I need like guest co-hosts, right? Mm-hmm. I always, Kupo is usually the person.
Oh yeah, she's a good one.
I always reach out to because there's so few people that have this knowledge and are also like available to do a show like this. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
and willing to work
with us. And willing to work. That's
the Venn diagram gets real small in the middle.
So people, I think, take, a soccer coverage a little bit for granted because the people who work in it know the most about either a league, let's say NWSL. Mm-hmm. There's few people that know more about NWSL than you, and you're willing to do that. And we all, there's not a ton of money in this. And then you're also like available to like come through and hang and do a comedy podcast at the same time. And it's just like, there's one of these things where...
It's a breath of fresh air.
You gotta applaud the people that are like are doing it and giving it, giving their all to the game. And I see that in your work, especially in the last few years. So my first question to you is, how and why did you get into this?
Wow, that's
what
a good
you,
question.
What decisions did you make like that ended you here?
We'll give you hours.
Yeah.
It's a long story.
It's a winding path. Yeah. I mean, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Honestly, I kind of fell into it, to be honest. Fell into the NWSL coverage of it. Mm-hmm. But I played soccer, loved soccer, had a lot of friends in the NWSL. So I was following it and watching it and started calling games, getting into it. And I was like, hey, this could be fun. They hired me without barely seeing a reel or anything. I don't know how, but they did. And I was like, okay, right. I'm getting into
who's
this.
When you say they?
NWSL. Okay, I reached out and I was like, hey, I'd love to call games for you. And they're like, crazy.
You're in.
We need people.
You're in and you can't say no.
We need people. Yeah.
I think in that era where there was like six employees.
No, literally.
Yeah. So they were like, you want to work with us?
Exactly. Yeah. And then COVID happened. So immediately they called me and were like, actually, never mind. We're not playing any games right now. So that was like 2019. Mm-hmm. Fall series started got back into it. And I mean, Attacking Third kind of spun off of that as well because I was calling games and I was like, okay, like let's keep talking about it. And before you know it, I know everything about this league. I know every player. It's crazy what my brain continues to hold on to.
Sure.
Right.
Without any of the important information that I actually need in life being in there.
My wife will sometimes comment that she's like, okay, she'll say it to other people. She's like, he has no clue where our checkbook is, but he knows the third stringer on a second division team.
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know why that makes sense to us three, but the rest of the world sees us as complete lunatics.
Yeah. I know like Emma Hayes' every tactical alignment she's going to make, but I don't brush my teeth. Yeah.
You always think being on this side of the table, bro.
But you got to balance those things out.
You got to priority, right, Lisa? You don't brush either.
No, never.
Hit us with it.
Never brush my hair, nothing. No, you know?
That's it just naturally looks
why
like
you
that.
Put me on this side of the table.
Woke up like this, bro.
No, it's it's been a really cool thing to see because in the last few years, especially I would say since that Challenge Cup, because
since you asked to be an NWSL, the league has changed. Everything has changed.
Since that first Challenge Cup, where I think that was like a weird put NWSL in a different trajectory.
Well, everyone's sitting at home. They were smart enough to start early, and everyone's like,
"They were the first."
Something
they were the
myself.
First
professional sports league that started back up. After,
really smart
after COVID. And but I would argue like you're a part of that ascension as well because you know people get. I'd associate it to like Rebecca Lowe. Like we worked with NBC and going to the fan fest, and people lose their mind. They're like, Rebecca Lowe is their soccer mom, and for a lot of people, you can feel like their soccer mom.
Wow.
Like I'm watching the game.
Wow, I didn't bring orange slices today, Christian.
Damn,
I'm sorry.
Also, I got a boo boo during the game. Did you bring Band-Aids? I think that's a sort of a good way to look at it, right? It's like the league has started to grow. Now all of a sudden you're a part of it. Does it ever, you know, getting a chance to speak to players and getting a chance to speak to some of the players that you know, and now there's a new crop of players that you didn't come up playing with that are superstars. Yeah. Does it ever feel like it's cool that you still get to be a part of
the
game? Yeah,
for sure. Because it has changed so much too, to be honest, because and not even just from that Challenge Cup back in 2020, but like there are so many more teams now. There are four more teams than there were in 2020.
There's so many more leagues.
and there's more every day. Yeah. It feels like they're applying every single day to get more. But yes, the players are changed and they're so different. But it's really been like this pretty cool trajectory where everything that happened in 2021 with like the league basically being uncovered with coaches being fired and all this change, but there's still so much fun to it. And also like the fan bases have grown. There are like supporter sections that travel to games that come up and say hi to me when I'm at games. And like that is very cool to know how passionate these people are.
Sure.
And even like in Philly, where I'm from, I was back there this weekend. Ooh. They don't have it. They don't have an NWSL team. They don't have any women's professional team. So they have adopted Gotham a little bit. They adopt Washington Spirit. They do watch parties in these cities that don't even have a team. They're
what's the Philly Union waiting for, bro? There's a stadium right there in Chester.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Yeah, the Philly Carlins, bro.
New GM, bro.
Let's go.
Should have got a clipboard and a visor. See out there.
Okay, let's get to more topical stuff with them yourself because the news last week
you mentioned it, a new division's applying.
New division. So when we all hear second division, we're like the pro rel, the drooling begins because everybody
It's starting.
Finally, you know, they got free agency and with everything. Yeah. So maybe this can be more like the European model. But this is, at least from what I understand, is it's a little bit more
sold for sure.
Tempered and it is just more of a reserve league than a second division that anybody could get relegated to.
They're
right?
very much comparing it to similarly MLS Next Pro in the soccer world, minor league baseball. Really, I think is the best comparison for it because it will be affiliated with current NWSL teams. Injured players can go down. You can have this kind of flux. I mean, think about all these random tournaments that the league has. Summer Cup last year when they had no players rostered. They were calling retired players. Hey, can you join our squad? Are you still playing?
We had Nicole Baxter on the show.
Exactly.
She's like, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I got to clock out from my job at EA and let me go play.
She's like, I didn't know for this. I didn't know they wanted me back.
And it's like, wait, you're going to sign me just as a training player? Oh, no, wait. I'm starting in the game. Like, there's a big flux there. This will hopefully eliminate that. I think that's the plan and the goal.
Can I ask
you? I don't know if it's going to happen that quickly, though.
Can I ask you a question, though? Do we need it? There's Northern Pro League, the Northern Super League. Europe is there. There's a bunch of teams in Europe. Europe's pretty big. Also, USLW. I mean, do we need this division? What is this?
And the WPSL Pro League just announced prior to this that they were going to try to be D2 as well instead of D3. So it's another one.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have...
I mean, obviously, the growing the talent, I would love to see... All of these teams have academies associated with them so we could build more talent and that would be wonderful. But at some point, the product becomes watered down. Why couldn't the NWSL just loan injured players, those players that would go down to the USL?
That would be logical. There's no connection, though, so they wouldn't do that, right? It'd be entirely different leagues.
But what I feel that it's a little bit easier than starting a new league, no? Coming up with some type of agreement.
The idea, I think, is to have this bridge between youth college players and the professional league. But the logical step for me is academies. Have youth programs. Have academy teams that are under Gotham. That way you can start when you're 11, when you're 12, but you're nowhere near ready to be a professional. And you can play up until you're 18, then still go to college, and then still come back and play in the NWSL. That would make more sense.
But why? I don't know. To me, it's like this feels very MLS-y. This feels... like we need to protect the brand more than this would be a smart move for everyone involved. Because NWSL would benefit from having players that are more prepared, like what you're talking about, having a U23, having a U18, having a U16, more prepared for the professional game, more easily developed for the professional game. And when you're coming back from injury, go play for the Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay Sun. Go play for the Tampa Bay for a couple of weeks. And then come back to us fully prepared, match fit, and ready to go versus having to create a whole other league, which MLS has done this for many years. Create more stuff, and that's less money that ends up in the players' pockets.
Oh, absolutely. And the timeline for this, they announced that they want to do this in 2026.
Yeah.
That is next year. On top of the league already saying, we're going to have Denver come in. That seems to be all right. We can let them walk on their own. But Boston is a toddler. We got to hold their hand because they've already been through so much.
They can't even name their own team.
Exactly. So they're trying to come in as well, plus 8 new teams. So that is now 10 teams under the NWSL umbrella starting in 2026. Yeah.
It feels a little bit
How is that even possible?
It feels a little bit like the interest is in consolidating or even hoarding talent so that to compete with the USL Super League and Northern Super League.
But that's not to compete. That's to stifle. A move like that stifles other leagues.
Maybe, sure. I mean, if you hurt your competitor, you obviously, and it benefits you.
The way you should hurt your competitors by saying, fine, we have other leagues that will compete for talent, but if we pay our talent more, they'll come here. Yeah. And in the women's game, that makes a huge difference when you look at what the median player gets paid. It's not what, you know, we on the show, we'll talk about Trinity Rahman's contract. We'll talk about Sophia Smith.
Wilson.
We'll talk about Sophia Wilson. Thank you. I mean, we need
good thing I'm here.
Yeah, you see that, Ian Wright? Watch it back. I'm just saying, watch out. She got the info. We talk about the players who get the massive contracts, right? The Sanchez's, right? We talk about the big ones. We don't ever talk about, like, this player got re-signed, but They're barely making more than they used to, and they're making $50,000, $60,000 a year or whatever that number is. We don't talk about that. That raises that level if you stop trying to create all these other metrics and all these other systems and all these other leagues to just keep players from going elsewhere. Just pay your players more, and they won't go elsewhere.
And have better infrastructure within those teams, right? Like, if you have better training staff and you have better facilities and better environment for these players, they're not going to want to go to the USL Super League. I think that's a little bit of the scare tactic for the end of WSL right now of, okay, we now have this competitor league in our own country. We also have the Northern Super League that launched in Canada. They're a competitor. Think of how many players left the NWSL to go to the NSL. So they said, okay, what? Let's figure out what we can do to keep players here at the highest level instead of just...
NWSL was like, jail bars? No, okay. We're brainstorming. We're brainstorming.
We got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And instead of just taking a step back and letting things develop how they are, because NWSL is launched in 2013. All these other leagues are less than a year old.
Yeah.
You already have a leg up on them. Let it breathe a little. Let things happen. Get development involved in these things. It's not going to happen.
You have a leg up and let it breathe. My brain. I was like, damn, bro. Get the stirrups out.
Anyway.
Yeah, you knew the show you were coming to, dude. You knew what show you were coming to. Remember how stupid I would be during commercials?
Yeah, this is great. This is all
the whole
of it.
Show okay, is this. You're allowed to do that anyway.
Alexis did make a joke about Ian Wright, and I did want to talk about that. Because this is an interesting story in that it's just so avoidable. But if you're not aware, Annie Aluko, who is a former England international.
Yeah, she's an England international.
And you may have seen her. I know she had worked.
She's a pundit. She's a caller, commentator, if I'm not mistaken. She's an analyst.
And she's worked covering American soccer as well, or at least like World Cup. She's been on coverage. I've obviously seen her on American television quite a bit.
Not as much anymore, but yeah.
But yeah, she hasn't been on a while.
For a reason.
But... she was doing a podcast, if you're not aware about this. She was doing a podcast.
So doing a podcast, risk your job. Just remember that, Lisa.
Guys, I gotta go.
You get in trouble for all this.
So she was doing the podcast, and she's talking about women's soccer and women's football and coverage around it. So
let me read the quote. She said, and because this is important, because a lot has been made of what she said, but... this is a quote. I've worked with Ian a long time, and you know, I think he's a brilliant broadcaster, but I think he's aware of how much he's doing in the women's game, and I think he should be. I don't think he's aware, but I think he's aware of how much he's doing, and I think he should be aware of that. The fact of the matter is, there's a limited amount of spaces available, and if we had a situation where there was an equal opportunity in the men's game for broadcasters and coaches that there is in the women's game, it's a free-for-all. But that's not the case. I can't dominate the men's game in the way that, you know, you used Ian as an example. That I guess referencing that he's dominating in the women's game. That brought out a bunch. So essentially she's saying there's not as many opportunities in the women's game and Ian's doing a lot of work that stops me from getting as much work or other women getting as much work, which immediately everyone, men, women, children, dogs who can type, everyone was out to defend Ian Wright.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anyone who's carried the torch more for women's soccer and has brought more attention to it, especially in England.
Well, who's carried the torch more as a man? As a former player.
Or just a former player, or just someone, not a man or anything, just someone with a big profile.
Yes.
And I think that's the important
part. We know Ian, we've met Ian.
Right. And we don't know any. You know what I mean? So we're picking sides.
No, you know? I think it's a valid conversation because it's something we talk about as you know, heterosexual men in this space.
We do a lot. You know, we're heroes.
Congratulations, guys. You know what I mean? Thank you for being here.
You know what?
Yeah, thank you.
Bro, y'all need us, bro.
I think you just shook my hand for being heterosexual.
It was a joke about...
I'm like, all right, I guess.
Hey, congratulations, dude. Huh?
Pat myself on the back.
Hey, you did it, bro.
Another day. Huh? All this adversity you have faced.
Yeah, man. Thank you for listening to The Cool Agains. That's it for us. Lisa co-signs everything we've said so far.
You don't even get Lisa's response. Anyway, Red Pill Cool again, back at you.
Yeah, we back, bro.
All right,
let's bring in our guest, Andrew Tate. Come on in.
This is something we talk about where we never want to impose. It's like
we use this platform to try to uplift,
and we try to be cheerleaders, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I heard this from Annie Aluko, this idea that like, who, and you know, and just to go, all the drama around it, Enea Luko apologized after this. Ian Wright did not accept her apology. He's really just saying like, hey, like what he is doing is genuine. And this,
so much of stuff has come out. Like he's paying for players' recovery.
Rehab. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
how many? He's like a model individual.
He is occupying a spot on television that maybe a woman would be there if it was not Ian Wright. But Ian Wright, in my opinion, is nothing but an advocate and supporter. Yeah. So it's like a very strange criticism of somebody who's clearly an ally and supporter and using his impact and his profile to put that spotlight on the women's game, which arguably is like what everybody asked for. And for him to get this criticism, it's harsh, but it also seems wildly unfair.
Yeah. So Lisa, are we the problem? Are we problematic?
Let us know.
Potentially, yes. No. Honestly, like makes the coverage of the women's soccer more legitimate, I think, when you have anyone and everyone talking about it. That's what you want. Just intelligent people to talk about the game. I don't know how you guys got a job, but we're right. Doing it here. But that's what I think is so important, that having more men, more whoever, talking about it. Now, the context in which he's talking about and how this whole conversation kind of came about, she got herself really stuck in the mud. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if there's not enough coverage of the game, right? To create more jobs for more of these former players or women to talk about this sport. It's not that Ian is in the sport talking about it, because he should be there. He has championed so much of the women's game and held the torch and exposed the game to people that are fans of his and now say, oh, he's covering the women's game. Now I'm going to watch it, right? That's mm-hmm. how you grow it. That's how mm-hmm. you get more people involved. She really kind of continued to step in it at times, though. And even her apology was more just, I'm calling out Ian and I shouldn't have called out him, but this is still a problem.
Right.
I think it's more of the coverage of the sport. There's not enough coverage of it, and there's not enough opportunities. It's not that men are taking that opportunity.
It makes sense to say it's not a problem that Ian took one of the jobs. The problem is that there aren't enough jobs. So create more jobs, create more content, create more podcasts.
Create more leagues.
Straight men. create more leagues. Actually, Attack and Third should apply for a second division. Yeah. This is genius.
it's an interesting thing because it's something where like I think about like the sensitivities around it, because even if you're not trying to cause a stir or even,
but it's the problem is that Ian Wright is such a beloved figure.
Yeah.
From literally everyone. I mean, he is, it's like his fan base looks like, you know, a cruise boat let out. It's everyone, old people, kids, everyone loves this man. Yeah. So to see someone even point out that something he's doing is, well, technically that's wrong, as opposed to just the how much he's beloved. It's like the wrong person to point at in this situation.
It's a bummer only because like Enea Luko also gets a ton of unfair criticism and is attacked even before this happened. A lot of unfair
Anytime
criticism.
Anytime a woman talks about the men's game, they get attacked.
It does arguably feel a little bit of like, you know, arguing, being upset that there's a woman covering men's soccer.
Which is stupid.
It's not necessarily the same equivalence because, again, there aren't as many jobs available. So I understand that aspect. But it is really just, if it was a terrible pundit that didn't support women, or he doesn't belong there, not supporting,
or
the
doesn't know anything about the game, 100%. Doesn't watch it, doesn't know the players, can't add context and value to it. That's very different. Very different.
Yeah.
Even like with all these players retiring around the world, they're getting these jobs being pundits, being analysts, and they should. They played at the highest game. Speaking as someone who has a job in this space and is very lucky to and grateful to, but I didn't play on the national team. So I understand that what I have to bring to the table is going to be different than Becky Sauerbrunn, who's at the U.S. soccer desk now. Mm-hmm. And I think that she should be there because she's adding so much context and value to it in the same way that Ian Wright is as well, because he knows the game. I think if you just kind of like waltz in there as a former men's player and don't know the league or the teams or these players or anything about the women's side of the game, but you're talking about your experience, that's where it's like, okay, you got to learn about this side of the table before you can start bringing up your own experiences and try to relate them to us.
But that's because he's a champion of the game, of the women's game. It makes sense that he's there.
And he has
been.
Like,
no disrespect, Nigel Cochran gave that job. You know what I mean? I love the guy. We love him. Nice. Wait for him to be on the show. He's a homie. But you know, he hasn't had the same experience. He doesn't have the track record, you know?
And also
we talk a lot about pros. We don't talk enough about fat comedians getting jobs in the sport. You know what I mean?
Fat comedians are overlooked. And it's hard to overlook that.
You gotta really swivel. You might pull a neck.
It's almost intentional.
You cannot see me. You know, I'm doing a lot of lateral movement.
Look, we all have our own journeys to this
game.
We
all get there somehow.
So look, and Ian Wright speaks always so highly of Arsenal. I love hearing the way he talks about the
when he talks about Arsenal, he talks about it as a full club,
and women's side, right? And
Champions League is a good opportunity for us both, right?
Yeah, and so Champions League is very entertaining on both sides. For obviously the women are in the final, but that's kind of an aspect of when he is talking about the Arsenal players, he doesn't talk about them. The Arsenal women's player, he doesn't talk about any different than when he was playing with Gilberto Silva, when he was playing with those former players, and that you can sense the real care of how he just is. He's just normalizing. They're all
exactly
athletes, and he's talking about them. So I say that just to talk about a little bit about the UEFA Women's Champions League, and we had two very entertaining second legs. Arsenal go to Lyon and
absolutely
losing,
destroy
crush it.
And really just
crush it.
Humiliate Lyon at home. There's something to I don't know how you feel about this, but because of all the drama around the U.S. women's national team, and then sometimes Lindsay Heaps has a bad game, and then I watch
historically back.
I watch, so I'm like, all right, let me see how she does in this big
game. Not the best day at the office for Lins.
Not at all.
Not the best day for Lins.
Just for one match, the second half at least.
But this was a big comeback because Lyon, won. I don't even know how many times they won Champions League, but they've won
eight?
It quite a bit. Yeah.
So that's another one of those random things in my brain. Eight.
Yeah. Also a thing where I have to I do not watch too much of the European women's leagues. I mean, I always say this, like my soccer diet is like Premier League, Bundesliga, NWSL, MLS, and everything. Anything else that gets in there is like...
How do you have time for that? Exactly.
This kid's like, up. Daddy up. He's like,
he's watching with me.
Paderborn. I gotta watch.
Hey, it's Hoffenheim.
You have any idea?
Who do you think I should bet on?
Why don't you go practice, kid? Maybe I'll watch you.
So, but these games were really entertaining, both of them. But Arsenal do win. And I mean, what was your
Alessia Russo,
response? This game was nuts. It was so entertaining for the average football fan. If you're Lyon, maybe not so much. But to go away from home for Arsenal and to put on a performance like that where you dominated essentially in every single phase of the game against champions, time and time again, champions is very surprising.
Especially with the team that has the Champions League aura and lore that Lyon has.
Which I think hurt them. I actually think that hurt Lyon in this game because they were kind of like, okay, we do this all the time. We make it to the final. We win away at home in leg one. We come back at home and we're going to have this one in the bag. And Renee Sledgers and Arsenal said, not this time. We're going to crush you.
I mean, I think it was the second or the third goal where like, there was a just calamity of errors where all the players are just throwing themselves on the ground. Wendy Renard is diving.
Wasn't that the equalizing goal?
I don't remember which goal it was.
I think it was the equalizing goal where it was just like boom, 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 boom.
But the ball just always kept falling to an Arsenal player regardless of how much.
I feel like that was happening constantly in this game, and it was like dominoes for the Lyon defenders. They couldn't really get their footing. There was, I don't know.
Like compressed highlights is just an Arsenal player running at goal with Lyon defenders behind him. Yeah, just constantly. It was, to me, it was exciting to watch, obviously, as an Arsenal fan. But when you look at it, the tides seem like they're turning in what we talk about is like the original stalwarts of the Champions League and the women's game. It feels like there's so much more investment being put in place in Europe. And you could see Arsenal is one of those. There's more teams playing in their home stadiums. You know, Arsenal is one of those teams that play a lot more games in the home stadiums. In particular, we talked about the Women's Champions League. There were so many more Americans than there used to be. Do you think that's like a trend that's going to continue? More Americans going to play?
I do. I think the allure of Champions League play is a big pull for a lot of players, especially when you can play at a team in England like Arsenal and get to the top. I mean, the fact that Arsenal is the WSL team that has made it to the championship, I think is very surprising to people at this point in the season. Maybe not so much, but Chelsea was the one that everyone was like, okay, they're going to win another Super League title. They'll make it to the Champions League final. And this is finally going to be the year that Arsenal Chelsea, lift that elusive trophy that they've never won. But players want to play in Champions League. They want to go overseas and experience the culture and experience the difference of it. And I think a lot of times the safe place to go is England because of
the same language.
The language, of course. And also there's a number of other Americans over there now. So it seems a little bit better for players from the NWSL to go there. But I think we're only going to see more of it. More and more and more of it, now, especially now that Emma Hayes is the U.S. head coach.
And this is why my pitch to NWSL would have been create a Champions League here. You have the Northern Super League. You have USL. You have you. Create a competition.
Liga MX, Femenil, Liga to bring Liga Mexico into it.
Enough with this stupid Challenge Cup. We did it already. It's one game.
Please,
we
no
don't
more.
Need it.
Please,
we
no
don't
more.
Need it. Create a Champions League-esque competition involving all of the best leagues.
Well, I think
all
that's the plan now. Like, I think long term.
Not if you have a second division. Why are you wasting your
time on that? I think they're
going to
do a type of U.S. Open Cup.
Oh,
I think that's what they're going to try to do.
Okay.
Well, if I were them, that's what I'm
trying
to do. I don't know. I haven't heard directly from NWSL, but
the
backtrack.
The main issue is just that if it's a Champions League and it's like it's CONCACAF, the quality dips after Canada, Mexico, U.S. I mean the quality.
Then they don't make it into the competition.
I understand. I understand that. So,
do you get to the issue of Challenge Cup or Summer Cup where it's just NWSL teams against each other?
Right.
And that's
right.
not what you want.
I mean, look, Champions League, a lot of the leagues in Europe are very top heavy, especially in the women's game.
Oh, yeah.
You have three or four teams that take it super seriously, in some cases one or two, and then everyone else is like, hey, we got a women's team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Applaud for us. And that's it. They put no effort into it. And then you've got your teams that take it super, super seriously, and those are the ones that generally end up in the knockout phases of Champions League.
Yeah.
And that's the
you
same
can
thing
predict
be
the
here.
Top like six Champions League women's teams every single
every
year.
Single,
you
right,
know
right.
who it's going to be at the top.
It's still a thing where, you know, the pool of talent is just not incredibly, incredibly massive. So this is why Chelsea and Arsenal and Man City get the best players.
But they're also now spending big money to get
them. But it's an academy thing, and it'll improve over time. But yeah, we need it. It's like at the sort of foundation is where it needs to start at a young age. And this is the issue with every. There's a finite amount of quality talent, so we have to do everything fundamentally to keep building that. Year after year, like those great players. So
my point is build the Champions League here and people won't want to go to Europe as much.
It could work too, potentially, because NWSL getting rid of the draft, it has already this year, we've seen the top four teams stay at the top as they were last year. Mm-hmm. So the best players from the college game or whoever entered the draft aren't going to the worst teams. So we're already starting to see a little bit of like cream rising.
Right.
Which could potentially happen in the USL Super League, which could create a pretty fun Champions League. Something right. type of it happening. Which is not fun for day-to-day league play.
I think it is. No. I think, I read Super Soccernomics. I read a book, everybody.
Whoa.
It was an audio book. Anyway. But one of the things that completely changed the way I look at super teams,
You know, it's like you have now this villain. You have this villain that shows up to your city. So even if your team sucks, you now have a reason to go there. And everybody, the league is better when there's someone that everybody wants to beat. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So if everyone is, if parity continues, no one ever knows who's going to be good, who's going to be bad. Teams kind of feel the same. That's going to start to sort of, there's going to be a gap. There's going to start to separate. And then you get a team that sort of rises to the top every once in a while, surprises everyone. It creates a bit more drama. It creates a better atmosphere. And I'm all for it.
I mean, it's, you know, what you're, do you want pro rel? Do you want playoffs? It's just a matter yeah. of like both, preference bro. At that point. Yeah, anyway,
we can do both.
I do want to ask.
But I also, real quick, I need a Montreal Roses kit. I don't know. Who do I
oh, they're cool.
to? Who can I talk to?
All of the NSL kits are really,
Fire.
Really cool.
Some of the logos are a little.
Oh, just the I one think with they're
the,
awesome.
Nice collar. I forgot what team
no,
that
some
is.
Of them are a little ChatGPT-ish. Some of y'all didn't really try.
Okay.
Yeah, some of y'all fivered your way to a logo. But Roses, everything they've done from the beginning to end, mm-hmm. I'm madly in love with Montreal Roses kit, the logo, the everything.
Okay. Well, they put
send
the word
me,
out.
Send me a kit. Go triple XL because it's humble.
The other women's Champions League game I want to mention, obviously, the second leg of the Chelsea-Barcelona game. And Barcelona humiliate.
I mean,
they score 8-2.
Chelsea were there? That's crazy.
8-2. You ate to see it. You know, we all know that one. But Barcelona score 4 at home, and they score 4 away against Chelsea. And the main point is, obviously, it is a very disastrous result for Chelsea. But the main thing I want to talk about here is that Naomi Gurman left San Diego to go to everybody was just like, that shit, she's going to dominate in Chelsea. Mm-hmm. She's going to be, they don't even need a player like her. And now that they do, it gave a little bit of
Mbappe Real Madrid.
Mbappe Real Madrid vibes. Like, oh my gosh, she's about to change the game out here.
The rich are getting richer.
And I don't know, it's not really working how I thought it would. And mm-hmm. this game highlighted that a lot. She got subbed out in the second half. I don't know if it was an injury or she left?
I think she was still on minute restrictions.
Okay.
I think she was still coming back from her injury.
So maybe she's...
But also, like, good move to take her out.
Sure. Yeah.
They're like, yo, quick.
She's getting run over.
Minute restrictions.
Yeah. Hurry. Get out.
You're so bad, we need to restrict your minutes.
Maybe she's not fit and not fully
yeah,
fit.
Yeah,
and
stuff it's like not that. All her fault.
I don't want to see her in that situation, obviously, as a U.S. Women's National Team player. But this collapse at Chelsea. I mean, I know Barcelona good, but this is not.
No.
Barcelona are like historically good, though.
Right, but Chelsea are not historically bad.
No.
And they looked historically bad in this game. They looked rough. Gurma looked bad. She was like a giant hole in that center back. And I think twofold, because we know how good Gurma is. Club-wise with San Diego, internationally team, with the U.S., we know that that is not the standard that she plays at. She has this giant pressure of being the most expensive player in the world right now, sitting on her shoulders to perform well. And then she's dealing with this injury. And on top of it, she has to play alongside entirely new teammates, getting used to them in a position as a center back where you guys have to be thick as thieves. Mm-hmm. You have to know each other and your movements and everything you're doing. And Gurma is also used to being the one in charge, the center back that runs things. She is now second in command to Millie Bright.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're going up against giants of Barcelona. And to me, it looked like a little bit of a mental game for all of Chelsea throughout this match. It was a really embarrassing game for them.
Yeah, I think for me watching it, I was like, okay, it's very clear that Barcelona plays like a team that's played together for a very long time. They understand each other's movements. They kind of understand. Everyone understands what's going to happen. And then every once in a while, if things fall apart, pass it to Aitana Bonmati, and she's going to be able to go right past your defender. But you see those moments, and then you look at Chelsea, and part of it feels dated. Part of what Chelsea's doing feels like, oh, y'all never got the update. Y'all didn't get the update. Mm-hmm. Like Barcelona feels like they're on, like, you know, WOSO 3.0. Mm-hmm. And something about the way Chelsea were playing, many of the times I've seen them play against, Barcelona, and they don't have Sam Kerr, and they don't have, you know, Lauren James healthy. And you're like, this feels dated. This feels like old.
And they were without a lot of those superstars. Yes. Even Kat Macario coming off the bench. I wanted her to get the
Massive
start.
Miss.
Really big miss. Yeah. But when I think so often we just look at the Super League, the WSL, and compare Chelsea and Arsenal. And Chelsea is games ahead of Arsenal. They're going to win the league. They're going to be fine. Arsenal is the better team right now, hands down, because they can adjust, because they have all these different weapons and they kind of take on the underdog mentality at times, saying we can defeat these big giants like Lyon. But for Chelsea, I mean, this game was really bad. Yeah. I would go home and be sad and just hide under my covers because it didn't look good anywhere. They had no moments of like, oh, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help when you're going up against Barcelona. That is the absolute best. But you think you'd show up a little better. Yeah. You'd stand a little taller.
You ever, get bodied like that in college, in a college game?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I've gotten wrecked. I'm going to be honest. I've gotten wrecked.
What happens after the game? Like, how long before you look at your texts?
Oh, a while. Yeah. You stay offline. You don't do anything like that. You also like don't want to talk to your teammates, especially as a defender. You're like, please, this was a rough day for me. Like, I swear I wasn't here for this. Yeah, you just wait a while.
I had a bomb on stage so bad that I didn't text anyone for like 2 days.
Oh,
I didn't even look at my phone.
Mm.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah. Not as embarrassing as your college career. You want to throw shade? We're throwing shade at each other.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what position did you say you were?
Defender. As a defender.
Okay.
Outside back. Outside back.
Okay. Right or left?
I played on the left in college. Okay.
Yo, are you left-footed, though?
No, I'm a right-footed player.
All right. So no crosses? You were cutting in?
I could cross with my left, but I like to cut in.
All right. I cannot cross my left.
A little bit of everything. Whatever you need. Whatever you need.
Put me in coach. Doesn't matter where.
Lisa, can you let people know where they should watch or what, you know, where to catch you and all that stuff?
Yeah, Attacking Third on CBS Sports. Listen as a pod. Don't listen to these guys, you know.
You have something to listen to after us. really reset the mood.
They pair well.
Yeah.
Exactly. On YouTube, we hang out on YouTube a lot on Attacking Third and then NWSL Games. I'm calling them this year back in the booth, which is really fun.
Love it.
So I'm happy to be there. I'm kind of everywhere. And NWSL, pretty much any channel, I'm there.
Love it. Nice. Yeah, fun.
And you have a lot of new members of Attacking Third this year, huh?
We do, guys. Right. We grew our roster. Jess McDonald, world champion. We got McCall Zerboni, former Gotham player. She's like, I think I looked up her stats one day because I'm a nerd with stats. She is the second most player in NWSL to play the most minutes and start the most games. And she just retired last year. So we snatched her up.
Amazing.
We've also got Jem Beattie, Champions League player, former Arsenal legend. Yes. She's on the crew. And then Darian Jenkins, Sandra Herrera, Christine Kupo. You all know her here pretty well. The regulars.
Several of them have been on the show. And I met McCall at Ali Krieger's retirement party.
Yes.
And that's where I was chatting with her as well.
That party was a wild one.
Yeah, it was wild. She could dance. McCall's a brother. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Okay.
Recovering from an ACL tear.
Well, that's going to slow down recovery. I see that move. What is it, 4 to 6 weeks until you can twerk? That's crazy. That's crazy.
Lisa Carlin, thank you so much for joining us. This has been the best.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course.
Shout out to Lisa Carlin. Woso convo.
Absolutely. Let us know if you want her back. Let us know if you never want her back on the show. Huh?
Exactly. I mean, we love any kind of engagement.
Just let us know if you want her instead of us.
Type a random, thread of characters.
Drop the GGs in the chat, dude.
Okay, we don't care.
Yeah.
The algorithms don't care.
You know
either.
What? Put your favorite emoji that people don't use enough. Throw that in there.
I love
you know
Lisa.
Which one mine is? The moon.
Wait, yeah.
People don't use the moon emoji enough.
All right.
Throw a moon in the chat.
Sounds gothic. I don't know.
The moon?
I don't know. Anyway, so shout out to Lisa. Let's
Christian
wrap.
Thinks it's gothic to control the time.
Let's talk about one more thing before we wrap up. Wrexham FC. Blake Lively FC.
Oh.
No.
They definitely want her name attached to that.
So Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, they've been promoted again. The club moves up to the championship. So they went from National League, League Two, League One, now
championship.
Now the championship. And to do this,
they're the first team in history to do back to back promotions.
This is and it is impressive. I mean,
that is
massive.
Right, but they...
What is it that Americans know about promotion that Brits don't? That's the real question.
Hey, that's why we need our hands meddling in your sport.
Bro, we figured it out. We figured out your whole game, dog.
Okay, you're welcome. But no,
drop the white paper, bro.
This is a thing where, I mean, you got to give credit. I mean,
this is a massive accomplishment, regardless of anything associated with the club or not.
Yeah, because some people are poo-pooing it and being like, what? All this money.
People are poo-pooing something in soccer? That's crazy.
It's easy to get promoted when you got a TV show and all this money and Hollywood superstars.
No one stopped any of y'all from doing this.
Okay.
There's mad celebrity owners. There's oil states that own your clubs. And none of y'all thought to pick up the phone and call a Hollywood producer?
Exactly. Hey, look. I mean, this is why they got Michael B. Jordan on the Bournemouth Ornos group. Okay?
And let me tell you something. I bet you they don't even have a training center in Wakanda. You know what I mean? Like, we're not thinking deep enough,
exactly.
Bro.
Also, Everton and Jason Kidd. That's also a very strange one.
Super strange.
But we in it. We're in here. All right? Anyway, Wrexham doing this is honestly, truly one of the most impressive things in like world football. This is
one of the smartest approaches to football ownership. Mind you, they didn't buy an MLS. They didn't buy in USL because they went lower league. They didn't buy anywhere else. They went to Wales, dog.
Yeah, man.
They went to Wales. No disrespect. No American, unless you're related to someone, was going to Wales. Okay. You know what I mean? They went to Wales. Rob McElhinney, at home during lockdown, watched the Sunderland Till I Die and said, I think I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then realized it was a lot more money than he had. So he called his rich homie, Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And they came together and look at what they've done. And by the way, I have a stat here that's crazy because I know everyone's like, oh, it's just the money. It's just the money. And that would have been easier if I had it pulled up. Wrexham have only spent 5.9 million euros on new players in the last 5 seasons under their American owners.
Wow.
So it's not like they're like...
It's not that enough.
They're not doing Neymar 200 million euros. It's straight up smart buying and buying players that are better than the other players in your league, which might be the way to go, it turns out.
Yeah, I mean, look, they when it comes to...
By the way, that was from Transfermarkt. So that's real.
So we have the homie Joe Pompliano, who was just on the show recently, was talking about it. And it says the Wrexham story is wild. They were bought for $2.5 million, produced a docuseries on FX, which everybody's seen, added 3 million in social media followers, and obviously having the Hollywood behind you, that helps quite a bit. And they generate 35 million in annual revenue. And when it comes to the Wrexham brand, I mean, when I played in TST, Wrexham had men's and women's teams there.
They're like, what, the Wrexham Red Dragons or something like
right.
that, right?
And the Wrexham players, the men and women, and mostly the women, because the women were the current players on the team, and they were part of the documentary as well. But they were getting stopped walking around, photos,
wearing that shirt and being associated with that club celebs. Makes you a superstar. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
100%. So it was
your reality TV show stars.
Exactly. So it was really cool to like see that like on the ground, like how much impact the show has had and how much impact the team has as well. But now let's get serious, right? Because the story is lovely, and when we think of the level of league two, of National League. League two, and they missed promotion the first year, right? And then
missed the promotion, and then they've been promoted ever
exactly.
since.
Exactly. So the story is incredible. Mm-hmm. But now the championship is no joke. It is.
Well, I can imagine League One was a big shift from National League. Yeah. I'm sorry, League Two.
From League Two.
And I can imagine League One to League Two is a big shift. Probably until they get promoted again, if they ever do. The biggest shift they face right now is going to championship, because these aren't just clubs that are, you know, in the lower leagues trying to figure it out. These are clubs that all kind of have Premier League level, you know, at least a few Premier League level players in there, at least one or two that are probably going to get plucked by a team above. And also you have the teams that parachuted down and they're like, hey, hey, we got to beat up on y'all because we got to get back.
Exactly. Because I mean, we're sort of seeing it now, or we saw it last season with like Sheffield United, who gave up the most goals in the Premier League. Now they're now fighting. They're one of the playoff spots, but they're up there, and that we're
Leeds
strong.
Got dropped down not too long ago. They're back up.
And Burnley are both back up. But the championship is again. It just feels like the level. I just don't think we're gonna get a back to back to back to back. This is where
it stops now.
We hit the brakes a little bit. Yeah. Hey, Rob and Ryan.
Yeah, you had a good run. But now it gets really real.
Lovely story. So, you know, that's the question we're all sort of asking. How long are they going to be in the championship? Or even do they get relegated from the championship? Is that even a possibility? When it comes to the preparation that they've done to get to where they are now, and signing Ben Foster, which feels like, you know, him coming out of retirement.
The double save. The
double save. You have good moments.
Yeah. The vibes were great. But then after that.
Then it's like, all right, well, now reality kind of hits you in the face. And you're like, you need good players. You need young players.
You need consistent players.
You need experience and all these other things. And then every other team in the championship is basically doing the same thing. But I don't know how much the storyline of Wrexham is going to help them get to the Premier League. It'll help them to some degree. Every other team playing them is going to be like, all right, there's cameras everywhere. It's a bigger deal. But is that going to be the thing that pushes them to the Premier League? That's where I think it's going to. Now it's like GM, coaches, and everybody figuring out, sporting directors figuring out what the best way to figure all this out is. I just can't see them getting to the Premier League in one season in the championship.
So look, like, can we scroll down to the other tweet? Because I think this is important to understand. A long time ago, a lot of studies have been done on this. Spending money on players doesn't make you a championship team. The thing that correlates most to championships is how much wages you're willing to pay players, right?
Yeah.
And that's without a doubt over the course of history across every league, the team that pays the players the most typically has the best players and typically win the league, not buys for the most. So how do you get that? By getting more revenue, especially now where PSR and these types of...
Click on that, Carter.
Yeah.
So obviously with PSR and things that are going to start to become a lot more important than they probably were in League 2 or League 1, right? Now you need to create a lot more revenue. So you look at this. Over the last three seasons, they went from what that looks like, what, $7.5 million dollars in revenue to close to $35 million that's 4x, 4 or 5x in such a little amount of time. Yeah. I don't think all of a sudden that stops. I think the story of Wrexham, I don't know if it's everyone's talking about it the way they were the first season of the show, but the fan base keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like, you know, Survivor's still on. Big Brother is still on, right? I mean, these shows are Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
These shows have a baked-in fan base. I think the story just keeps getting bigger, and I think the revenue goes along with it. And also, I don't want to discredit what they've already done. They came in and said, you know what? We need to get people that know better than us. They went and they've hired the right people. They went and hired experts that have said, okay, you really want to make it? Here's a smart way to do it. Go buy better players. And they've done that every time. Who's to say this stops now? I think the championship has, 28 teams? Something like that? 24 teams? Look it up. I forget the number, but I know they play every 3 days. This is going to be a big learning curve. And for that, I agree with you. I think championship is going to be tough for them to figure out because it's not the same as it was before. This is a big learning curve. These teams are a lot tougher. They play every
24
teams. They play every 3 days. This is really tough. It's not an easy league to get out of. But the National League wasn't an easy league to get out of. League 2 wasn't an easy league to get out of. They're playing on terrible pitches and, you know, without the funding that some of these bigger clubs have. And it was a dogfight and they managed a way to get out of that. League 1 wasn't an easy league to get out of. I don't know why all of a sudden, you're not the only one, but a lot of people think like, oh, it stops now because now it gets really real. It's been real since National League.
I mean, I understand the point you're making.
So for me, who's to say that all of a sudden they're just not going to be able to figure this out the way they have before? Yeah, you're not going to be able to get a bigger player that's on the fringes of a smaller team come in and boss it like they did before. But why can't they go out and get better players? Who wouldn't want to play for this team at this point?
I agree. Like all I'm saying, it's a good story. The only problem here is that the prize is so, I mean, clubs are ravenous to get into the Premier League or get back into the Premier League. The competition is, yes, it is just going to be so, so severe and so fierce that I can't see them. And I watch a couple championship games, maybe at least like one or two a
month. I try to watch a bunch of Middlesbrough because of Aiden Morris when he was there.
Sure. And it's like it's a bit chaotic.
It's wild. You never know who's going to win week to week.
Sure.
And that's why I think it's going to serve them better. Actually, can we pull up the other tweet, Carter? The one about the valuation. And this is what's important, right? Wrexham, they bought it for $2.5 million. Today, it's worth $133 million. That is a 49,000% increase in value. They've made all these smart decisions. I feel like even smarter and smarter people are going to start walking in these room in that room,
sure,
and carry this to the top. It feels like a club that's destined for the Premier League. The storyline, the TV show. Maybe we almost made it. Maybe there's one of those Hollywood storylines in there.
Yeah, yeah. So like Rocky.
Yeah, I could see one season not working out. I can't imagine they just rest on their laurels. They're going to continue to get smarter and smarter. That's how it feels to me. And I see minimum 3 years before this team's in the Premier League.
I think the roster, they've had like, you know, Paul Mullen and the, you know, they have like Jay Rodriguez, and they've had players kind of go with them through this whole, this journey.
If you ain't getting burned on a Premier League bench, if you're one of these players for Sheffield United, you tell me you're not going to be a superstar?
I think the
join Wrexham and all of a sudden your shirt sales go crazy.
You're speaking very like confident, like they're gonna like
they've done it for five years.
You're falling in love with the story too much.
Even if this wasn't a TV show, they've done it for 5 years. All of a sudden they're gonna stop?
No, yeah, I think so. I think so.
That's
crazy. I think the roster turnover is gonna be a little bigger than it has been for the other from the other promotions. And that's, you need some time to adjust. And to adjusting to the championship is wild. It's really difficult. Even if they bring in, even if, let's say, you know, I haven't heard this rumor, but Jamie Vardy is a name that, who knows? Like, that might be a possibility. He obviously is leaving Leicester. That might be a move that could help them. But there's still some level of adjustment to the championship and competing with teams that are desperately trying to get back and spending a ton of money. So, and then also Tom Brady's Birmingham is trying to, they just got promoted. I believe they got promoted as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think he's going to do everything possible to get into the.
What's he going to do? What's he going to do? Your hut?
I'm just saying.
What's he going to do?
I'm talking about the financial.
He's
going to
stand there with his buccal fat removed from his face and his new plastic surgery. And he's going to smile for the cameras. He don't even know what league Birmingham City playing, bro.
He's literally been to games.
He's been to games. He has no idea. He's in a suite. He's like, where do I smile? Which camera do I smile at?
It's going to be. You think in three, I don't think they. I would say between 5 and 7. I think they can do it. I think it's going to take some time.
At max, 3 years.
All right. Be a lovely.
The real question is, do they sell before that? Or do they wait to try to get the Premier League valuation?
There we go. That's what we're
They've doing. Already 49X. or 490X their investment. I mean, at this point.
You think they will get out now? People will be pissed. No?
Smart move.
Whatever. All right. Well, congrats to Wrexham for getting to
They deserve all the credit. And more American excellence. We need it in a time like this where there's not that much American excellence.
We need American mediocrity.
Yeah. No.
We need whatever.
No. People already voted for that.
We're beneath.
No.
But we're beneath the mediocrity right
people
now.
People already voted for that. We need to show that there's still some smart people here, bro.
All right. Shout out again to Lisa Carlin for joining us from Attacking Third.
Shout out to everyone on Attacking Third.
Yeah, yeah. Also, good.
Can we get all of them on this show?
At the same time.
Bro, how many? We need a bigger table.
Uh-oh. More microphones. We'll figure it out. Thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday. We have a really exciting episode. We have a great guest. Everton midfielder Iliman Ndjaye will be joining us this week.
Look at the smile on your face.
Oh my goodness, it's just such a nice feeling. He's a great guy. Yeah, great guest, great dude. And we'll talk. Everton are playing in the Premier League Summer Series.
So you don't say. That's how we got him.
Okay.
Thank you.
Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Follow us on Blue Sky if you have not yet. Get on there ASAP. That's where all the action is. And join the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans. All right, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday. And we'll be talking Champions League, obviously. All right. We'll see you then. Peace.
Love you guys.